Okay, so this is session 241. Joseph and Emma and the Nauvoo Mansion. And the presenter is Lachlan Mackay. And I found out that the reason he pronounces his last name like that is because his father was Australian. That's how they pronounce it in Australia. Lachlan lives in Nauvoo, Illinois. Is the director of community of the Christ director of the Community of Christ Historic Sites there, and for 15 years he was in Kirtland and worked with historic sites in Kirtland. And so this will really be a treat today to see his take on the these important historical sites in Nauvoo. And I will turn the time over to him. I'm sorry, you're going to have to speak louder.
We're coming up right now.
So again, I want to share today about Joseph and Emma Smith's Nauvoo Mansion House history and mystery. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we think we know of the Mansion House, but I'm also going to raise a lot of questions that I don't have answers for. And we'll see how that goes. Just a little background. For years, we kind of self-defined our mission at Community of Christ Historic Sites as sharing the story openly and honestly and graciously. And by graciously, we're trying to say in a non-threatening manner. So how can we talk about at times difficult topics, but in a way that is comfortable for folks? Our first presidency in 2008 came out with some history principles that helped us define what we were trying to do even a little more. There's a number of them. The ones that I think impact what we're trying to do at historic sites, especially in our interpretation, are things like the church encourages honest, responsible, historical scholarship. That one's pretty straightforward. Seeing both the faithfulness and human flaws in our history makes it more believable and realistic, not less. And we need to create a respectful culture of dialogue about church history. Even, I know this is hard to believe, but Barb Walden and Mark Shear and Ron Romig and Bill Russell and I sometimes disagree on some pretty significant items, but we try and be respectful as we do that. So these kinds of things inform what we're trying to do at Community of Christ Historic Sites today. I want to start with just a brief tour of the Mansion House. When Joseph and Emma Smith first arrive in Nauvoo, they move into what we now call the homestead. May of 1839, but it is really crowded and eventually very expensive for the Smiths in the mansion. The Church High Council came out with a statement saying, please, 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 when you show up in Nauvoo, don't just go to the prophets and expect to be fed and housed and cared for. Please don't do that, but it didn't work. And so Joseph and Emma are overwhelmed pretty significantly with visitors. So, and I'm going to share our current interpretation, and then we'll talk later about how that might be problematic or some of the questions raised. So last day of August, 1843, Joseph and Emma remove across the street from the homestead to the Nauvoo Mansion House. You see a photograph of it here. Now, it originally was much bigger than what remains today. You see the white picket fence stretching out behind, and the hotel wing, so you have the house, and then the hotel wing, which is an addition, stretched out even further back than the white picket fence that you see in this photo. So it originally was a much bigger structure than what survives today. Within a few weeks of moving, the Smiths open the hotel addition, and at that point they welcome their many visitors. They even welcome them to eat at their table. They also, of course, welcome them to pay for the privilege. So they go into business, the Nauvoo Mansion House. I'm going to fast forward significantly. Actually, let's not. By February of 1844, Joseph and Emma realize that innkeeping is not the best use of their time. With Joseph, president, lieutenant general, mayor, chief justice, about to announce his candidacy for U.S. president, they decide that innkeeping is not something they need on the resume as well. So they lease the hotel operation out to Ebenezer Robinson. And when they do that, they have to give up not just the hotel wing, but almost the entire house. They get just three or four rooms for their private use out of 24-room house. So Joseph's killed, though, in June of 44, and Ebenezer Robinson fairly quickly moves on. So Emma leases the mansion house to a man named William Marks. And it seems that in the fall of 1844, Emma moves back across the street to the homestead, Joseph and Emma's first Nauvoo home. Fairly quickly, though, William moves on. He's not particularly supportive of the Council of Twelve, and so eventually Nauvoo is not a very comfortable place for William. He moves on. The Council of Twelve seem to take over running the mansion, and they assign at different times... who are some of the folks? Thank you. Anybody? They assign at different times Benjamin F. Johnson, and I think it's John Pack, to run the mansion. But as the 12 head west, Emma again gets control of the mansion. She leases it to a Mr. Van Tool, and she flees in September of 1846, right before the Battle of Nauvoo. I think it died again.
It died again.
She flees in 1846, right before the Battle of Nauvoo. She goes to Fulton, Illinois, just maybe 90 miles north of Nauvoo. But by February 47, Mr. Van Tool has realized, I'm sorry, that Emma has realized that Van Tool is preparing to steal all her furniture. As soon as the river thaws, he's going to load it on a flatboat and head south. So February 47, Emma rushes back. Apparently catches him, Hickson moves back into the mansion. She is there, we think, until about 48, 49, when Louis Biden, her second husband, gets gold fever. He heads west on the gold rush, and as he does that, Emma's daughter, Julia, and Julia's new husband, Elijah Dixon, take over running the mansion. Emma goes back to the homestead. So Emma goes back to the homestead. She's there, we're not really sure, but maybe a year or so. Louis comes back from the gold rush. Elijah is not well, Julia's husband. So she is not able to care. They're not able to take care of the home. Emma and Louis go back to the mansion. And let's see, how long are they there? They're probably there then until... about 1871, when Emma and Louis moved to the Riverside Mansion, or the Nauvoo House. So for really from 1839 to 1879, with the exception of about 5 months and a few brief stays in the homestead, this is Emma Smith's, Emma lives on one of the three corners of the intersection of Main and Water. For most of that period, several decades, she's here in the mansion. Emma, by 1864, even though she's still living here, had apparently deeded it to her son Alexander, and her son David, born after his father was killed, was given the back half of the house, the hotel room. David married, had a child, is eventually, he's very talented, but also eventually very emotionally disabled. And in 1877, David was institutionalized in Elgin, Illinois, probably bipolar, not sure. But he lived out his life in Elgin, Illinois, in an asylum there. Of course, he's not able to care for his part of the house. And so, and Alexander, who had the front half, was working for the RLDS Church by that point as a minister, had very limited resources. So he was able to keep the front half standing, but not really able to do much with the back. He eventually purchased it from David, not able to care for it. So by 1890, the hotel wing is falling into disrepair, apparently getting dangerous. The city asked that it, we think, that it be torn down. Whether they asked or not, we know that in July of 1890, the hotel wing is demolished. So the house survives, but the hotel does not. So what you see is the house. The hotel does not survive.
Sorry.
No problem. Thank you. I kind of feel like I'm giving a tour at Nauvoo with jets flying over and lawnmowers and the barges on the river. It's just everything kind of thing. It happens all the time. The floor plan, now this is based on a 1934 Historic American Building Survey drawing. And so a couple of details we think we could refine a little bit more now. But this is the first floor of the house with the hotel wing attached. So as you walk in, this faces west. As you walk in, it's sometimes called the office, and more often called the... More often, we call it the bar room or the public room. And on the north, we're going to talk about the parlor. Straight back, they have it labeled the living room. We typically would interpret that as initially Emma's kitchen, but then a private sitting parlor for the Smith family. A little hall. The dining room, the hotel dining room. Kitchen. And then Lucy Mack ends up living in what they have labeled a servant's room on the back of the house. It's back there that she had the mummies on exhibit. I love that Josiah Quincy and Charles Adams story. We'll talk more about it later, but Joseph's a little unsure as to who these guys are. I think that he put the Quincy and the Adams together and made them John Quincy Adams. So he thought that it was somebody really important coming to visit, but was really good at hiding his disappointment when it was not John Quincy Adams. Josiah Quincy Charles Adams, still a prominent Boston family. But he shows him around the house, he takes him to the back room, shows him the mummies, and then says, "Gentlemen, my mother usually gets 25 cents for the privilege." So again, this was the first room on the south or the right as you walk in, the bar room or the public room. We have accounts of Joseph sitting on the carpet in this room pulling sticks with the Nauvoo police. Everybody know what stick pulling is? Yeah? You sit on the ground, your feet against your opponents.
Stick in between. Pull the
other guy up and over the top. It's huge in Nauvoo. Everybody's in the sick pole. This particular account says that Joseph could pull up even the stoutest of the Nauvoo policemen with one hand. Not sure if that tells us more about the prophet or the police. Joseph and Smith's parlor, again, in on the left as you walk in. It was in this room that Joseph was having a meal and complaining that Emma had fed him too much. And W.W. Phelps was there, so Joseph is complaining to W.W. Phelps that Emma had fed him too much. And Phelps said, "Well, you should do as Napoleon does and just sit at a small table with just enough room for a plate for yourself." And Emma said, "Oh, Mr. Phelps, you don't know Mr. Smith as I do. He could never eat a meal without friends at the table." So that's the parlor. Emma's kitchen, but once the hotel lease is in place, this becomes a private sitting parlor for the Smith family. And as part of the lease agreement, Joseph and Emma get to take their meals from the hotel dining room. Again, converted to a private parlor for the family. I think that Joseph and Emma spent their last New Year's together here.
Somebody had rented the hotel dining room and was having a big celebration, but the Smiths chose not to attend. They instead gathered quietly here with Joan Taylor, a few family and friends. Again, the dining room, it was torn off in 1890, so everything from here back, torn off in 1890. It was in that dining room that they had the public viewing of the bodies of Joseph and Hiram Smith, June 29, 1844. Imagine 10,000 people walking through the front door, through a hall door here, into that dining room to pay their final respects.
Which way did they exit?
Which way did they exit? We have a debate about that. I think Dr. Richmond says that they went out the north door, so maybe here. Second floor plan. Up the stairs, Joseph Venema's first bedroom. Another Smith family sleeping chamber. This is originally a servant's room. Becomes Joseph and Emma's final bedroom after the lease agreement is in place. Sometimes called a storage room. Some people think this might be the room where Joseph and Hiram's bodies were hidden after the public viewing and before the secret burial. It's also becomes, after the lease agreement, the children's sleeping chamber. We now realize that the rooms were a little different. There were four double rooms here, six single rooms here. Again, one of the sleeping chambers. This is on the southwest corner. Joseph and Emma's final sleeping chamber. Again, had been the servants' room, servants' quarters. Joseph and Emma's quilt, and this quilt came to us from Linda Lorraine Smith family, Joseph's hat box. That is traditionally the rail and style chest where Emma hid the manuscripts that would later become the inspired version of Joseph Smith translation of the Bible. Emma came to believe that as long as she was protecting those manuscripts, she and her home were protected. The children's room. Definitely three, maybe four kids end up in that space. All right. So some of the many questions that come up as we try and interpret this home. Some really basic stuff, like what's the name of this house? When you see this picture, I'm guessing most of you think of the mansion house. Is that? Yeah? Now, that's actually not the official name of the home. It was the Nauvoo Mansion. The Nauvoo Mansion, and we've got a number of sources. For example, Joseph's journal, Friday, September 15, 1843. Joseph raised a sign, Nauvoo Mansion. Joseph Smith III's memoirs dictated decades later, but at any rate, it seemed spacious then, and a sign was put out giving it the dignified name of Nauvoo Mansion, a house destined to become quite famous and interesting in its day. So although it's calling it the Nauvoo Mansion, even in Joseph III's memoirs, far more often in his memoirs, it's the mansion house. What I've come to realize since moving back to Nauvoo is that in many ways, our interpretation of Nauvoo in the community of Christ is based on Joseph Smith III's memoirs, again, dictated decades after the Nauvoo period. And so, and we kind of infected our LDS visitors with some of this language too. So the Nauvoo Mansion, we call the Mansion House, the homestead, Joseph and Emma's first Nauvoo home. Well, I don't think you're going to call it the homestead when you just moved in. It is a decades later thing that we have applied to it. In the 1840s, it's Joseph's old home or Joseph's old white home near the river. The one that has really captured people, though, the Red Brick Store, which is not, I think, an 1840s name. But most often, it's General Smith's Store or Joseph's Brick Store. So it's kind of intriguing the way that our language is involved and that is now shared with others. So the original name of this house, I think, Nauvoo Mansion, most often today we call it the Mansion House. When is it built and when did the Smiths move in? You'd think that we would know this stuff. This should be pretty basic stuff in Nauvoo history. I don't think we know this stuff. And it starts to become a significant point of discussion when we try and figure out where events happen. So, for example, there's interest in if Emma Smith and Eliza R. Snow had a conflict involving some stairs, where might that have been? We get asked that pretty regularly on tours. And we're not sure there was such a conflict, but based on the descriptions of the events, it doesn't really fit in the mansion, but it also seems not to fit in the homestead. But it would help if we knew when the Smiths were living where, because right now it seems that Eliza never lived with Joseph and Emma when they were in the mansion. And typically this is the home that that event is placed in. So it becomes kind of an interesting and important question. Here's what we know. Thursday, August 31st, from Joseph's journal. About these days was moving into the new house on the diagonal corner to commence keeping tavern. So without a question, there is a move into the home, August 31st of 1843. What we're not sure about is that the first move into the home? Here's what Joseph III later says. About 1842, a new and larger house was built for us. After it was finished and we had moved into it, some friends suggested that it should be expanded into a hotel, large enough to accommodate the usual crowds of visitors and an adequate force of domestic helpers as well. Alexander later remembers, he's talking to his daughter about having torn the hotel wing down, but here's what he says. I had to have all the big dining room and all east of the room where the brick oven was torn down, and of course the part thus exposed weatherboarded up, so it leaves the house as it was before the addition was built. So both of the boys are saying there was a house, and then after the house was complete, the addition was added, the hotel wing was added. And the structure of the house supports that. The hotel wing connects to the house in a really awkward way. So for example, in Joseph and Emma's last bedroom, there are closets on the back wall. When you open one of the closet doors, they cut another door in the back of that closet, and then you had to step down, and you were on the second level of the hotel. So it's built a step lower than the house. We just recited the back of the mansion house, and the step is still buried in the wall. So there's this really awkward connection. So the physical evidence suggests they're two different structures built at two different times. The boys remember it that way. There's even things like two privies. There's a small residential privy bit and then a massive commercial one. Well, why do you need the small residential if you already have a massive commercial one? And as we're going to see later, there are 10 rainwater collectors that were on the house. And they have different dates on them. The ones on the front, 1842. The ones on the back, the addition, 1843. So here's what I think right now. I think the house is built in 1842. The hotel addition is built in 1843. But I'm not sure if the house was occupied or not before the August of 43 move. The boys say yes, but I have no contemporary documentary evidence to support that, but the physical structure supports their reminiscences. So again, I think that I'm unsure about an 1842 move. I'm positive that there is an August of 43 move into the house, and the hotel wing is attached at that point. The house had wonderful 10 rainwater collectors, or conductor heads, they're sometimes called. You see Habs drawings of them. And these are the ones from the front of the house. They didn't capture it here, but in paint, you can see there's an original in the collections of the LDS Church. I stopped by the museum on Thursday just to make sure. You can see 1-8 and then a 4-2 painted on this side. So these are 1842 suns, moons, stars. And I'm really intrigued about the relationship between Joseph's introduction to Freemasonry and the symbolism of the collectors, and then later the symbolism of the Nauvoo Temple, or kind of at the same time. Then on the back half of the hotel edition, you see spread eagles with stars, and they had an 1843 painted here. I'd love to get these back on the house. They are incredibly cool. So, again, questions that I don't have answers for yet. What's the relationship between Masonry and these symbols? It's 42, I think, when Joseph is introduced to Freemasonry in Nauvoo. It's 42 when the front part of the house is built. And then, is there a relationship between these symbols and the symbolism on the Nauvoo Temple? I've seen at least one Nauvoo Temple drawing that didn't have sunstones. It had trumpet stones, but no sun face. So do these impact the symbolism on the temple? I don't know. I'm intrigued. Monitors or not? So in the earliest image of the temple, I'm sorry, the earliest image of the mansion house, you'll see a flat roof line. Fairly quickly, this is a Robert Campbell image, maybe 47. Same guy who did that one. You see a monitor. And that becomes important when we talk about a closet a little later. David Hiram Smith's painting of Nauvoo, again, you see the monitor. And this would be a cultural symbol. It would say public building. You would know when you saw that, that that was a place where you could stay. So I think probably not there originally added after the hotel wing is open. So does the mansion house have a secret closet, or does it simply have access to the attic? When you go into Joseph Benona's first bedroom, there are two closets on the back wall. The closet on the right, if you know how to operate it, you can get the wall to swing open, and behind it is a ladder into the attic. There's a long debate about what this feature is. So there's a bill in the collections of the LDS Church that seems to be for the construction of the Nauvoo Mansion. And on that is making closet and scuttle in roof $8. So we think it's there very early. It's Joseph Coolidge who's doing the work. I think this is an 1847 account from the Ladies' Magazine and Casket of Literature. This lady stays in the mansion, leaves, and then is told this. There was a closet on either side of the fireplace, one of which they opened, and removing some pegs intended to support clothes, saw a square opening with a flight of stairs leading into the garret. So it suggests that, again, that it was there very early. But in 1909, some RLDS ministers visited, and they went to the mansion with Alexander Smith. Now, he seems not to have gone upstairs with them, so I don't think this is Alexander saying this, but he says, John Granger, Heman and I went up and examined the alleged secret closet, of which I have a photograph. It has a ladder running up to the garret from which there was an opening onto the roof, such as are found in many ordinary houses today. Because of the skill with which the ladder was built, some evil-minded people have tried to make it appear as a means to accomplish crime. Glenn Leonard kind of came down on that side of the issue. When he was talking about this image, you know, Robert Campbell, and about the monitor on top, Glenn says, the evidence of Campbell's reliable painting means that the ladder hidden in a second-story closet directly under the cupola was used by the Smith family to gain access to the rooftop lookout, not to a hiding place for the prophet as previously surmised. Now, actually, the ladder isn't directly under the cupola, but it kind of makes sense. You would have to get there some way. But here's what Joseph Smith III said. Now, Joseph III describes in his memoirs a hiding place in the homestead that his father had used, he says, on a few occasions when sheriffs from Missouri were coming and trying to arrest Joseph and extradite him back to Missouri. Joseph III also describes the hiding place in the mansion. The house father built in 1842, known as the Nauvoo Mansion House, contained another very simple hiding place. In the north room upstairs, there was a chimney which ran up from the ground floor, from the ground below the house and through both stories of the building. Beside it was attached a ladder to which access was gained only through a closet built out flush with the chimney. This closet was boarded up inside, and at a point about 6 feet above the floor, the boards were cut off and a door hung, secured to the chimney space by a cleat hung on a hinge at one end and into which pegs were inserted. When this cleat was dropped down upon the top of the doors, it appears to be simply a piece of wood with pins in it upon which to hang clothing. When it was necessary to use it otherwise, the cleat was lifted, the door opened, and one could pass up the ladder into the attic or garret above. There, boards were laid down on the joists and quarters arranged where several persons might be comfortably located and where considerable ingenuity would be needed to discover them. This clever hiding contrivance was in the mansion the last time I knew anything about it, and may be there yet, for that portion of the building is still standing, though the dining and sleeping rooms that transformed it into a hotel rotted down and have been removed. So in Joseph III's mind, there was no question that it was a hiding place. So I think that both might be correct, that when the house is standing with no monitor, it's a secret closet. But once the monitor goes on and you need access to get up there and monitor your surroundings to look out, then it also becomes access to the monitor. So both versions are probably right. Mansion House sign, for years, based on David Smith's painting, we had a replica of this sign standing in front of the Mansion House, but bumped into a bit of a problem. Hard to see, but here's the sign. You're looking right at the edge of it. Here's a better shot. So we realized that we had carefully recreated the second Nauvoo Mansion sign. It's now down, and we're looking for somebody to make us one of these. Who's behind the bar? The barroom story. Most of you have heard of the barroom story? Some of you? Who do we always blame for it?
Rockwell.
Porter Rockwell. Yeah. In the reorganization, we usually blame Grigan. Any chance we get, Grigan did it.
He probably did.
Yeah, he probably did. Right. But in this case, we have always blamed Porter for the Mansion House bar. Here's Joseph III's version. And again, we've been heavily influenced by Joseph III's memoirs in our interpretation of the site through the years. Mother found installed in the keeping room of the hotel, that is to say, the main room where the guests assembled and where they were received upon arrival, a bar. So Emma's been gone to St. Louis to purchase furniture for the new hotel. She comes home, there's a bar with counter, shelves, bottles, glasses, and other paraphernalia customary for a fully equipped tavern bar. And Porter Rockwell in charge as tender. She was very much surprised and disturbed over this arrangement, but said nothing for a while. A few hours later, as I met her in the hall between the dining room and the front room, she asked me where Father was. I told her he was in the front room. She asked, "Is there anyone else there?" "Yes, quite a number." Then she told me to go and tell him she wished to see me. I obeyed and returned with him to the hall where Mother awaited him. "Joseph," she asked, "what is the meaning of that bar in this house?" I told her of Porter's arrival. So Porter has been jailed in Missouri for an attempted assassination on Governor Boggs. He's been acquitted. He's made it back to Nauvoo. I told her of Porter's arrival and that a place was being prepared for him just across the street where he would run a barber shop with a bar in connection. So who wants to get their hair cut at a barber shop slash bar? Explaining that the bar at the hotel was only a temporary arrangement until the building referred to could be finished and ready for occupancy. There was no excitement or anger in Mother's voice, nor in what she said as she replied, but there was a distinctness and earnestness I have never forgotten, and which had its effect upon Father as well. How does it look, she asked, for the spiritual head of a religious body to be keeping a hotel in which a room fitted out as a liquor sell, in which a room is fitted out as a liquor selling establishment? He reminded her that all taverns had their bars at which liquor was sold or dispensed, which was true at that day, and again urged that it was only for a time and was being done for Porter's benefit, explaining that since Porter had been compelled to leave his own home and had, in a measure, been made a scapegoat for charges that had been made against the two of them, he felt obligated to help them. Shortly, Mother's reply came, emphatically, though uttered quietly. Well, Joseph, the furniture and other goods I have purchased for the house will come, and you can have some other person look after things here. As for me, I will take my children and go across to the old house and stay there, for I will not have them raised up under such conditions as this arrangement poses upon us, nor have them mingle with the kind of men who frequent such a place. You are at liberty to make your choice. Either that bar goes out of the house, or we will. It did not take Father long to make the choice, for he replied immediately, "Very well, Emma, I'll have it moved at once." And he did. Isn't that a fun story? When asked, we tell it pretty regularly in the Nauvoo Mansion. And there seems to be verification of the story from Josiah Quincy and Charles Adams. When they tour, I think it's about May 15th of 1844, when they tour the mansion, they say, on the right hand, as we entered the house, was a small and very comfortless looking ballroom, all the more comfortless, perchance, from it being a dry ballroom, as no spirituous liquors were permitted at Nauvoo. Now, that last is a bit of an overstatement. But I think it is clear that the bar was dry by that time. But there's a bit of a problem with the version that Joseph III tells and that we've told for years. Porter doesn't arrive in Nauvoo until December 25th of 1843, it seems. From Joseph's journal, a large party supped at my house and spent the evening in a most cheerful and friendly manner in music, dancing, etc. During the festivities, a man apparently drunk with his hair long and falling over his shoulders come in and acted like a Missourian. I commanded the captain of the police to put him out of doors. In the scuffle, I looked him full in the face, and to my great surprise and joy, and told, I discovered it was Orrin Porter Rockwell, just arrived from a year's imprisonment in Missouri. So Porter makes it to Nauvoo, it seems, December 25th of 43. But on December 1st of 43, this is in Joseph's journal. At home, 12 a.m., I think it's supposed to be him, secretary called to get a petition for an appropriation from Congress to improve the rapids, but the president, standing in the barroom, said it was not written. So we're calling this room the barroom weeks before Porter has arrived. And on Tuesday, December 12th of 43, again, Joseph's journal, at home, at 10 in city council in the office, passed an ordinance for the health and convenience of travelers, and etc. Here's part of the ordinance. Be it ordained by the city council of Nauvoo that the mayor of the city be and is hereby authorized to sell or give spirits of any quantity as he and his wisdom shall judge to be for the health and comfort or convenience of such travelers or other persons as shall visit his house from time to time. So this is giving Joseph the only license in Nauvoo to sell liquor by the drink. And it is, you know, again, a couple of weeks before Porter has made it back. So on the question of who is behind the bar, actually, I really prefer to blame Brigham, since it would be a bit of a stretch. We've always blamed Porter, but it appears that that one is even a stretch, and that Joseph gets credit for the bar. And I think Emma probably still gets credit for being a dry bar fairly quickly. Other questions that I don't have answers for. Where did Lucy Mack Smith die? Some sources suggest that it was in the Nauvoo Mansion. Some sources suggest it was the Smith family farm east of town. The location of Joseph and Emma's second anointing. If anybody knows the answer off the top of their head, you'd think they'd be in this room. We know it's upstairs in the mansion, I think in one of the front rooms, but there are two of them. Anybody have an answer on that one? Shutters or no shutters, there's something like 46 pair of blinds on Joseph Coolidge's invoice for building, but we don't know what that means. So as part of a restoration of the home, do we put shutters on it or not? Right now they have them. Some of the earliest images of the home don't have them, but other early images do. Finally, there's a story that Joseph III tells of him napping on a bed upstairs in the mansion, and it's got it's a canopy bed, and it's got curtains all the way around it. And one of Joseph's aides de camp, I think it was Lauren Walker, has been cleaning a brace of horse pistols that were Joseph Jr.'s. These massive pistols you'd strap on your horse as part of the Nauvoo Legion activities. And Walker, not realizing that little Joseph is asleep on the bed, throws the pistols in there. Joseph III wakes up, picks one up, and as little boys would tend to do, starts playing with it. And he's sure that there's no way they would have put them there if they were loaded. So he picks one up, points, and blasts a hole through the ceiling. Everybody is sure that they're under attack by a mob. And they come running, and they finally figure out what happened. And I would hate to have been Lauren Walker in that situation. We're trying to figure out which room did that happen in. What's it matter? Well, we'd like to know which room we need to get that canopy bed back into. But we've not yet been able to find the bullet hole in the lath or in the sheeting of the roof. So if any of you were bored on a hot summer day, you'd like to help me crawl into the attic. Just real quick, this is an incredible image in the collections of the LDS Church. It just tells us all kinds of things we didn't know before. So here's Port Rockwell's barbershop / bar, maybe / home. It was never finished. They laid planks over the frame of the building, and it became a speaking platform. And so Joseph addressing the Nauvoo Legion, I think that was maybe June 18. Governor Ford addressing the citizens of Nauvoo, June 27. Anytime you talk about the speaking platform near the mansion, that's the structure. And then Joseph Sr. and Lucy fairly quickly moved into a double log cabin across the street from the homestead. I believe that that's this structure. And that's probably where Joseph Sr. died in this building. So a few answers today, but far more questions. I'm hoping that maybe you can help us solve some of the many mysteries we have when it comes to the Nauvoo Mansion House. Questions?
You mentioned that it was the addition to the mansion wasn't torn down until 1890. Do we have any daguerreotypes or photos of that area? I don't think I've ever seen one.
Yeah, a question about images of the mansion with the hotel addition attached. I think I've got one in here somewhere. Unfortunately, they're usually at the front. So the back is there, but hard to see. And occasionally they're, well, often they're also obscured by the trees that are grown up. There we go. So there's an example where the trees are in the way, but it's there. Behind the trees.
Locke, curious about the water collectors. Do you know how they got to the LDS?
Now, how did those water collectors get to the LDS Church? I have no idea. There's one in the 70s hall, an original in the 70s hall in Nauvoo on exhibit. And there's, I think there's one there. It might be two, definitely one. And there's one here in the Museum of Church History and Art. I have no idea, but I'm not about to suggest that it was in any way that shouldn't have happened, because stuff ends up in honest ways with people all the time. That later you'll look at and say, how did they get that? So I'm not going to pass judgment on how it got there.
Brigham's fault.
Brigham did it. You know, we might well have thrown them away, not recognizing the value. I just don't know. Kirtland Temple stucco, for example, we threw away ravines full of it because there was no cult of the stucco that had developed yet. Now people are just fascinated, just a tiny piece there. I won't tell you what they'll do for it. But,
this may be a question out of an ignorant question, but why would Joseph Smith, why would he allow liquor to be sold in 1842, 1843, whenever it was that Puerto Rockwell came, when the Word of Wisdom was established in 1833?
Yeah, good question about the development of the Word of Wisdom and how it was understood. Word of Wisdom, as some of you know, it was given as advice rather than commandment. And sometimes they really seem to care about it, and other times they they don't pay much attention to it. But it really was understood, I think, early on as stressing moderation. And so I think, and there would be some here who would be far better qualified, but I think it's Leonard Arrington would argue significantly later when they start saying, you're wasting your money with Gentile merchants in the East on those things. We need that money for the perpetual immigration fund. And so what was understood as advice in the early church starts to be strengthened to command. So at this point in time, I do think pretty regularly when you have visitor accounts to Nauvoo, they would remark on things like the lack of public drunkenness. But I'm not suggesting that people didn't drink. We know they did. But I think they tried to do it. What's the word I'm looking for? Responsibly. Not falling down drunk in the streets.
The means of labor and materials were collected and made available to construct them.
How did they pay for this house?
Yes, because I've been to Nauvoo visit. It was a substantial house for that time and location.
Yeah, this was a giant house.
No, and I'm wondering how did that come about?
I don't know.
We don't know that.
We do have what seems to be the Spanish House bill. It's labeled something like bill number 2. I really want to find the first one. I think that Joseph made his living, for the most part, buying and selling the city plot. He's a real estate developer in Malibu. But the way that the bill reads, and this might be part of why it's phased as well, I almost think that Joseph would save up a little money, Coolidge would do some work, the money would run out, and it'd stop. Joseph would save up some more money and start again. But yeah, that's a great question. I don't know how did they get enough to do that. I don't know.
What was the total period of time from beginning of construction to completion?
We don't know. What's the total period of time from beginning of construction to completion? We don't know. They moved in August 31 of 1843, but even when they leased it to Ebenezer Robinson in January of 1844, the lease agreement says something like, and you also get intended future improvements on the east end. So they're still doing something out there. I don't know what that is. It might be where Lucy Mack Smith eventually lives in the servants' room. I just don't know. A lot of unanswered questions.
I think they talked about having...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, right there. They talked about having dances in the dining room there. Was that the biggest room in Nauvoo? How did that compare in size to the Red Brick Store upper level or the 70s hall? Or
question about dancing in the hotel dining room is the biggest room. Well, soon the temple would have had the biggest room, and so they moved things like the dances there. That's a great image, too. So,
I'm sorry,
from here forward is the house, from here back the hotel wing. I should know the dimensions of that room. It's like 24 by 28. It's not a big room, but I think it was one of the bigger rooms. I think Joseph III says that you could barely fit four pair of dancers, the French four. I don't know what that is, but that seems to be the favorite dance, the French four. But I think four couples would fit. So imagine, for example, Joseph and Emma spent their last Christmas together here, hosting 50 couples for singing and dancing and eating in a room that's something like 24 by 28. How would that compare to the Red Brick Store? I think it would. Red Brick Store upstairs might be about the same size, maybe a little bigger. Sevens Hall, I think, is finished a little later. Dancing, I wonder if I have dances upstairs in the Red Brick Store. Surely they did. It functioned as a cultural center. Yes, I'm sorry, sir.
I'm a little rusty on that time of history. But you came in, your church came into possession of that house because you stayed there when the Utah Mormons left.
Exactly.
Now, if the Utah Mormons left because they felt like they were under pressure from people who were after them, why did you decide to stay there? Didn't you feel under the same kind of pressure?
Yeah. How could Emma and her family stay in Nauvoo when the main body was forced out? This is kind of a generalization, but often when you read non-Latter-day Saint accounts of their Latter-day Saint neighbors, often they like them as individuals. What they do not like, what they're threatened by as they perceive it, is the gathered community, the block voting, the Nauvoo Legion, the economic power. So once the gathered community is gone, Emma's not a threat. Now, she had left. Remember, it's the Battle of Nauvoo, September 46, artillery battle. Mobs come in with cannons. Latter-day Saints are fighting back with cannons. They lose, and as part of the surrender agreement, every remaining Latter-day Saint had to go. Emma had left just before that. So she had left for a time, but fairly quickly, the conflict is over. She's not a threat, and soon she's just a much beloved curiosity. So now, when Joseph III first joined with us in 1860, didn't go so well. People are saying, "Oh, here we go again," and they're having visions of the marching militias, etc. And so they start getting together. Now, there's also misunderstandings about Joseph III's concept of gathered community, and so they start getting together township by township in the county, passing resolutions forbidding Joseph Smith III to preach or pray Mormonism. He was really stubborn, and so he vowed he was going to stay right there in Nauvoo and do as he pleased for 5 years. He moved January 1st of 1866. He got his 5 years. But by 1877, so 1860, you can't preach or pray here. By 1877, hundreds of Nauvoo residents are signing a petition asking us to move our headquarters to Nauvoo. I'd like to think they just recognized we're such wonderful people. I'm sure there was also some economic benefits they thought they might get out of that. But I also had realized that Joseph III's concept of community building would not feel threatening. So the Smith family simply stayed in Nauvoo with the exception of those 5 months. Emma gives the properties to the boys. Now, anything Emma got, she often had to buy back at tax sales, and the federal government was after her and had been after Joseph for a $5,000 note on a steamboat purchase. It was a struggle, but eventually she was able to get some properties back, pass them to her children, and by 1906 to maybe 1918, the Smith boys are giving or selling their properties to their church. So we have missionaries in the mansion house by 1918.
Sir? Yeah, you mentioned that Joseph and Hiram's body were lying in the dining room, now torn down.
Yeah.
Does that reflect any new scholarship or anything? Maybe I was just on a tour back by an uninformed guide, but I was pretty sure I was told that that was in the parlor that's,
yeah, you're not the only one. The comment that this gentleman had been told that the public viewing is in the parlor, and I think we have said that at times in the past, I don't know why or who or how, but sometimes it's because there's confusion on the names of the rooms or the names of the houses. But I don't know, but I don't think it's in scholarship. I think it's pretty clear that it's in the dining room. I'm going to come back here.
Yeah. You mentioned that the mansion house, or the Nauvoo Mansion, whatever you want to call it, was a way station or a port of entry for a lot of folks coming and joining the gathering, and that obviously put a lot of pressure on the family. But I'm curious about the folks coming and using the mansion house as a way station. In particular, I'm curious of the Manning family, the African American converts, which have become certainly well known since the 1978 revolution.
Question about the Manning family. I can tell you they're there. They seem to be fairly close to the family. But you need to come to Nauvoo in September. Joseph Johnston is doing a paper at the Dublin Historical Association on African Americans in 1840s Nauvoo, and has some great new stuff. The Mannings are there. There's some family lore that connects them to some of the reburials, the secret burials of Joseph and Hyland. But you need to come in September. How many places did it take the bodies? More than we know. Somebody just turned up yet another account of, it's Joseph S. Smith, 1911, Counts of the 12 Minutes, saying that they were buried secretly at Hibbard's Grove or Hibbard's Woods. We've never seen that account before, which is Death Hibbard, Davidson Hibbard, and now the RLS campground in Nauvoo, or the Leeworth Farm. So there's more moves than we know about, and it gets really interesting as to why. There's lots of reasons. They're worried about phrenologists sealing the skulls. And we have also developed this idea of relics, that the prophet's bones would carry authority. So, for example, John C. Bennett writes to James Strang saying, if you just seal the bodies, you'd have more followers. George.
Joseph was evidently in the real estate business. Benjamin Johnson is one of his assistants, and many others. How active was the westward movement into Nauvoo, up and down the Mississippi River? Was it commercially a boom town, really? What about the Mississippi River, if you could, as a second question? It's flooding now, this year. Nauvoo had a rise to it, so it was above the flood. But nevertheless, flooding could come around behind the city and sort of isolated. Was there any problem with the flooding, and how did that relate to the westward movement through Nauvoo?
Let me answer the flooding question. The question about flooding in Nauvoo first. June of 1844 was apparently then the wettest June on record. Now, I can't imagine the record was that long. But the wettest June on record, I have an account that says half the country is underwater, but Nauvoo is high and dry. It seemed to be, before the dam goes in 1913, it was significantly elevated, so it's almost like you're on a bench or a bluff looking down. So the river would flood, but Nauvoo is in a perfect spot, apparently, not to be threatened by that.
But access to Nauvoo?
Access to Nauvoo, still, I think, overland, and flooding, in some ways, moderate flooding would help. Because there are at least four landings in Nauvoo, and the one that Joseph really hoped to see developed was the Nauvoo House Steamboat Landing, right at the foot of Main Street, just by his house. But it struggled with low water. It's the home port for the Bay of Iowa, but it often couldn't get there. And so the main landing, the Upper Stonehouse Landing, on the other end of Main Street, had good deep water. So moderate flooding would make Joseph's landing better. But too much flooding probably is, of course, a problem. They also had a lower Stonehouse landing and the Kimball landing, so at least four of them. The other one, westward, I think Nauvoo was a boom town, but I think it was because it was a religious capital. It's gathering. So as soon as the gathering stops, there's no reason for Nauvoo to be there anymore. Cities develop based on transportation or jobs, and once people are not gathering, although it had some advantages because of the river, it was not where a city would just naturally develop. And so Joseph III did have some ideas of gathering in Nauvoo in the 1860s. Some of our members certainly began, but very quickly it became clear that it was not going to be the boomtown they had hoped to. and slowly we start fading and moving on. I think we're done. Thank you. All stick around in the hallway.